infinite complacence, people went to and fro over the earth about their little affairs, serene in the assurance of their dominion over this small, spinning fragment of solar driftwood, which by chance or design, man has inherited out of the dark mystery of time and space.
Live our entire lives knowing that death awaits us. Many believe that some part of us endures. Eyewitnesses swear to have seen spirits of the dead haunting the living, and even appearing during alien abductions. Is the UFO mystery reaching out to us from beyond the stars, or from beyond the grave? This staggering implication demands not only scrutiny of the UFO phenomenon, but near-death experiences, ancient monuments, ley lines, the fae folk, cryptids, and more. I'm Joshua Cutchin. I'd like to invite you into the Ecology of Souls, a new mythology of death and the paranormal, a comprehensive theory of all things supernatural framed through the lens of our final transition. Join me as we journey from the depths of prehistory to the present, from the outer space of the cosmos to the inner space of the self. Ecology of Souls, Volumes 1 and 2, now available from Amazon in print and as a combined ebook. Welcome to the Ecology of Souls.
Crazy months ahead, so it's, yeah, hectic amongst other things. It's like a new book launched or something. So.
Yeah, weird, right? Plus, what is this I see online that something about the Mothman Festival? Wow.
Yeah, I'm speaking on Saturday at the Mothman Festival. The 2 weeks before that, I'm speaking at DragonCon in Atlanta, which is like the biggest of the big. So I'm like bucket list checks. I'm just going down the list now, so... I figure Small Town Monster Fest next year, and then I'm done. I can die a happy man. So.
Oh, we got to keep you going. This gonna every year, just more and more steam is gonna be picking up, more and more momentum. That's great. Congratulations.
Oh, thank you. Yeah, we're excited. Carrie is chomping at the bit for Mothman. So, and I know I'm flipping out about it. What do you think, Carrie?
It'll be amazing.
Yeah, she's excited about DragonCon too. So.
Now, had you guys attended a Mothman festival just as bystanders before?
One of the first ones I was at, and that's been some time. So that was like 2000, early 2000s. I don't know what year, but I went for a day and wished I had stayed the whole weekend. So it was just, it was definitely, and I know it's just gotten more insane since then. It's like DragonCon. The last time I went to DragonCon was over 15 years ago, and I can't imagine, you know, how crazy that's gotten since then. So
now Mothman Fest is in September 17th and 18th. When and where is DragonCon, and is there still tickets available that people can get?
They are hard to get, but it is Atlanta, and it is Labor Day weekend, 2 weeks before Mothman, and it's a 5-day event. And it's basically takes over all of downtown Atlanta. It takes over 5 hotels. Now, yeah, I'm used to a convention center. MegaCon's the biggest one we normally do, and that's a huge convention center. This is like that times 5. If it's not the largest comic con / sci-fi con / paranormal con in the country, I don't know what is. I know everybody gives San Diego all the props, but this is, you know, San Diego's tiny, really. MegaCon's even bigger than San Diego, but this is the one in Orlando, but this is insane.
So tickets are hard to get, huh?
There, I think the VIP passes are all sold out. And some of the multi-day passes are still available, but individual days are kind of hard to get. So I think you can still get like Thursdays and Sundays, but like Fridays and Saturdays are all gone. And then the Monday Labor Day is you can still get tickets, but I know a lot of the big guests fly out that day, so it's kind of a shaky day for most anyway. But that's when I'll be participating in the most panels is on Monday, which is fun.
That is great. Yeah, huge congrats. And I think it's just amazing that there's enough interest and people buying enough and getting out enough, thank goodness, after all the things that we've gone through the last couple of years, that they have a 5-day event that they can still sell out. That's great.
Yeah, I think, and this is the first DragonCon. Did they do one last year? I think this is the first one since everything. So it was nice to be invited because I know they had a lot of rollovers and everything. So,
well, yeah, we are, and I'll put all the links that I can find at least for DragonCon to point people in the right direction. So if you guys are interested in that, please go to the show notes for this episode, which is of course at IntoTheFrayRadio.com. So on this episode, of course, in case you don't know his voice by now, if you don't, shame on you. It is Mark Muncy, and of course Carrie Schultz, Erie Muncy, is there in the background alongside him, and we are talking Erie Appalachia, and this is edition 2. Edition 1 was a few episodes ago, and of course you can go to the website and search Eerie, freaky, creepy, and then now you can add in the word Appalachia and these will pop up. But Mark and Carrie have been on many, many times. They are my most oft visited guests. So welcome back.
We are honored to be back. It is always a pleasure. We love Into the Fray, and we love sharing stories with all your listeners and the Into the Fray family, especially those insiders. We love those insiders, and I like chatting with all of them. So it's always a pleasure.
In fact, with you earlier before we hopped on going, oh, the cameras, I'm getting the camera set up and this and that. I'm like, oh, well, it's a regular episode. But that got me thinking it's probably high time that we get back on with the insiders, with the patrons, right? For a little video chat with them. We always have a good time.
Yeah. Carrie can show off some spiders. She's got a whole new batch of the jumping spiders just hatched. I know you'll love to see those, Shannon.
Well, yeah, if you can hold the little tiny ones that have all the eyes on the front of their face, that would be great. I don't know about the jumping spiders now, huh? How far do they jump?
Not very far at all, really.
Oh, okay.
You're talking like, you know, from your hand to the ground, you know, if that, you know, it's maybe a foot, you know, if they really, really try. Some of them get brave. And it's cute because they have these little safety lines that they spray out behind them. So when they jump and they're not quite sure, they've got a safety net, you know, which is pretty cute.
That's what all people need. You know, we need to take a page out of their books. I tell you what, just in case. I don't know if you wanted to start in Ohio or if you wanted to start with our neighbors up north, the Bone Lady, but I'll let you take this away, Mark.
I think the Bone Lady, since we're doing Erie Appalachia for the new book, and one of my favorite things about the book was we got to delve into what I was calling holler monsters, which are little legends that haven't really been told much, right? They're pretty famous in their little area, but that might just be one family or two families or maybe a small town, and they hadn't really gone much further. And that's kind of how big ones like Pope Lick or the Grafton Monster or things like that. That's kind of how they start, and then they grow, and then some grow to infamy like Mothman and Jersey Devil and things like that. So I really enjoyed getting stories and talking to people who had these legends and lore, but then were also witnesses, people who'd seen these things, families that, you know, had these strange occurrences. So I had to do a whole section of the book on this, and it was actually, I've got so many now, I'm like, all right, so volume 2, I guess, you know, probably coming soon. But I want to get up there and talk to the people and see the things. And so this was the furthest one we traveled to for the book. that's our thing. We've got to go to these places to catch the stories. So this one is, you know, hey, it's the Great White North, home of the Wendigo and all those other great legends of up there. I was so intrigued by this one, and it was in this little town, and the town's called Amqui, which is a native word that I could not find the meaning of, and no one seemed to really know the meaning of it. But they have a, how best to describe it, but basically, we love our swamp witches down here in Florida. We have, you know, Blackwater Hattie and, you know, Swampwater Maggie and the Hog Island Witch and all that. So I was so happy that we found basically something very similar. So she was a baby minder up in the area, was this nice lady, and she would take care of your children who were too young for school. And so this is early settling days there, so mid to late 1700s. I couldn't get a narrowed down field, really. I know it was pre-1800s. And that, you know, that was the early days of this settlement. She was basically just the mom, who the stay-at-home mom who took in all the other kids. And during those hot summer days, she was the only one, you know, every able-bodied hand was out there. So Mother Tabitha was always there, and she would come and she would eat at different homes every night. Somebody would always take her in. She never really had a, other than just being the town baby minder. So they all took care of her. And so every night she ate with a different family and all this. And then there was some brutal winters, as is up there. And, you know, and things would just, kids would die. It was typical high mortality rate in the area. And what happens is as she's doing this, one of the older kids in town follows her home one night for unknown reasons. The story does not go into detail, but they see her dancing in the moonlight, and she is naked, and she's with some sort of caribou-headed male next to her, something almost akin to, I would say, like a goat man or something like that. So he ran home and got his parents and said, oh my gosh, she's a witch. She's some sort of, she's cavorting with spirits. So they the town went up in arms to find her. They said, we got her. And they chased her into the woods. Now what happens is, we actually had a family up there say they knew this story very well, because it was one of their ancestors who was part of that hunting party that chased her into the woods and then said that you should never go into these woods because of the creatures that live there, and Mother Tabitha will guard it with her life because she is an immortal and she is made of bones. So she was, you know, her head was human, and the rest of her was made of skeletons of small children. So all the children who had died supposedly were her body, and only her head was flesh. And that's why when he saw her dancing naked, he had freaked out so much, because it was just skeleton. So we're talking like the leg is a child skeleton, the arm is a child skeleton. So some sort of kind of golem style of bones. And then her laugh is supposedly heard up there to this day. So that's why you don't go out into the woods up there, and why several families refuse to have non-family babysitters, only people they trust. And it was interesting that when we were asking around town about this story, a couple people did mention, you know, that they were never allowed to be with a stranger for any length of time because Mother Tabitha might get them.
Wow. Even to this day, that's still rife in that area.
Yeah. Well, and when I say to this day, these were families from the 1970s. Right. So these are, you know, folks in their 50s and 60s who were still talking about
that.
Wow. So
that is cool. I mean, in a, you know, murdering babies horrible kind of a way.
And that was the odd thing is I never could find out if she had actually murdered anyone. She was just made of dead babies. Huh. So that maybe that was, it was the desecration of the graves.
Right.
Or what caused people to hate her so much. Dancing with an unknown demonic spirit or a native spirit or something, a caribou headed spirit. And I couldn't find much on that. I was more interested in that, trying to find out more what that could tie into, especially if it was like some native lore or something. But of course, everything up there always points to Wendigo. And so I was like, it's not a Wendigo story. I like the Bone Lady. I thought that was a much more interesting story.
Of course, with her dancing with this caribou headed man, right? Is that a man or is it the thought that she was dancing with the devil himself?
Yeah. And when Carrie and I discussed it, it was one of those ones we were debating illustrating, but there was so many different ways it could have gone.
Right.
That we just, it was one of those, all right, it's on the list, right?
Yeah, I found that one really intriguing, but I wasn't satisfied with my concept art, so it just didn't make the final cut.
And I could see where it could spiral in so many different directions, right? And it would be hard to pinpoint that in your brain and be like, okay, this is conceptually what I saw, especially since she supposedly maybe had entire skeletons for each limb. That would be very interesting to try to put down on paper.
Some things are left better in the reader's eye, so right. I'm sure people can imagine something worse than I can depict.
Yeah, exactly. Hearing that story from the family and then so wishing we had had some sort of recent sighting or recent witness to go by, you know, but it's just one of those stories that's gotta be kept. I would hate to see that die. And again, it seemed like most of the people in town didn't know what we were talking about, but then the ones that did took it very seriously. And, you know, their family had protected them. And this isn't a big town at all. The fact that so many knew and so many didn't was interesting to me too.
The subject.
We find that in a lot of.
Yeah, yeah, absolutely. And lately the theme has been laughing, whether it be children or adults or non-human entities, whatever it may be, but laughing. So here's another story of laughing where it would be creepy or it shouldn't be happening.
Yep. So Mother Tabitha, listen for her if you are, and it is literally the mouth of the Appalachian Trail. That was furthest we got, and most people think of the Appalachians, they think Kentucky, West Virginia, Ohio, and that's, or Tennessee and all that. And it's like, yeah, and, you know, even North Carolina, South Carolina, and that's where it starts. But it goes all the way down to Alabama and goes all the way up to Quebec.
Oh, you guys are always on the move and you go to the locations. You, like you said, you put a lot of miles on your vehicles. Yep. It makes for good ads for whatever vehicle you're driving because they last.
That would be a Dodge Grand Caravan. Thank you for getting us steered towards Dodges there, Shannon.
Uh-huh.
We just did a trip yesterday with the great vloggers, Tampa J and Chris the Girl. If people like to watch, you know, travel vlogs and stuff like that, we took them to here in Florida. We took them to Casadega to start spooky season for them. So, and we went to the Devil's Chair, which we have discussed on a previous episode. So if you want to see some fun recent video of that, you know, look them up and they're pretty awesome.
Well, yeah. And this next one, actually the next two, Carrie did add her rendition of these creatures in. And this next one is really going to be talked about twice by me because for the next Patreon chat, it is Subterranean Strangeness. And it covers all sorts of, it's going to cover everything that I can find under our feet or in mountains. So the Bogeyman, and this is from Olympia, Kentucky.
Yes. This was one of those stories that when this is handed to you, you really don't know what you're getting, right? This was a family. They had letters from one brother who was working in an iron mine near, you know, in Olympia, and something had shaken him so much. Now he's just writing letter to his family, and there's dozens of letters of just, oh, hey, today we did this and I miss y'all and hope everything's going well. And then he'd get a letter back and then he'd reply. Oh, hey, how's cousin Irving? How's Aunt Becky, things like that. And so it was just normal correspondence. But in the middle of it, one of his descendants had found this unusual couple paragraphs in one letter. And so she reached out to me and said, "Hey, I heard you're looking for weird things." And I'm like, "Ooh, I love this stuff." So I go and read this letter, and it reads very normally. He's working in the iron mine, and something shook him, like literally to his core. And the way he describes it is they were working in the mine. They were doing some heavy blasting. They broke through a wall, and suddenly there was this giant open cave. Now, this is, you know, Mammoth Cave area and all that, so there's tons of cave systems up there. And in this open cave, they were very shocked because they saw a dead bear carcass, and it was being feasted on by what he described as large, squat, toad-skinned men with scraggly hair just eating the bear carcass. And they just kind of, the way he describes it is they didn't even care that the wall had come down or that these men were staring at them. They just kind of looked over at them and then went back to feasting on the bear. Now, the miners, guess what they did? They fled. "We don't want anything to do with this. This is insane, right?" These things killed a bear and they're eating it. They're going to eat us. So the miners refused to work. And he said, you know, he wasn't sure what to do. He was afraid to go back to work the next day, asking his father and his brother for advice, right? You know, what do we do? He just talked about him hunched back, pale eyes, these little things. It reads like something out of a Lovecraft story or something. I'm like, wow, this guy actually wrote really well and very descriptive. Carrie was able to use that to a T. And we both, as we're reading this, and I'm looking at her, I'm like, that sounds like freaking Gollum from Lord of the Rings, right? It was just such a crazy description. So the letter that he gets back from his mom says, well, the miners should, the mine company should take care of that. They should something in there to flush them out or to vanquish them, I think was the word. And so he sends back a few days later. The mining company did take care of it. They hired men, bear hunters, to come in and take care of the bear problem and the creatures. Now, he called them the bogeymen. Yeah, he took care of the bears and the bogeymen. He saw them carted out onto the big cart. And so the men were good to go back to work. And then his next question was like, so when's the wedding? And he's talking about some family wedding that was coming up and that he was going to come back and visit soon. And that's all it is these two letters. I have this story. Now, what happens is this mine, right? We are looking through the history of the mine after this to try to find, okay, what day did they do the blasting? What day did they do this? The hunting party. I'm trying to see if I can find when that was hired, the bogeys were carted out. So where did the bodies go? All that. Of course, this is 1870s, not exactly known for record keeping. So we couldn't find much more on that. The only thing we did find was that a number of years later, 1885, the mine was digging deeper in the hopes it had kind of gone dry in iron and they were looking for a new vein. And they set some blasting charges and set and lit it, and then nothing happened. So the miners come checking out. Oh, why didn't it go off? Did we use the wrong fuse? And when they got close, of course, that's when the explosion happened. And we know at least five died in that because there were five mentioned in the newspaper article about it. But the final tally was never confirmed. And a lot of, because of the nature of the world there, slaves wouldn't have been, this would have been post-Civil War, so it would have been like day workers and day laborers. They didn't record them as people when they would die, which is just, so we don't really know the final total. But there's one part of the newspaper article talking about a guy being blown 25 feet in the air from the explosion. And so the mine was closed again. And this time they were saying that it was the curse of the bogeymen. And the Rose Run Iron Tract, which is where that is active again. It is on private property, so you are not welcome there without written notice. They didn't know anything about the bogeymen when I asked them, and they hadn't seen any recently was the one thing they were willing to go on the record and say. So,
well, that's a bummer. I mean, probably good for them, considering if we're going to tie the five or six, however many deaths, right, 10 years later, mm-hmm. probably a good thing they didn't see them. So a couple things, of course, stand out, and that is the fact that it's a very specific type of a story, right, of a this report of yeah. these things that this guy comes up with, especially since it's essentially peppered into very mundane letters that he normally writes. And then the fact that if when you're talking about cave-dwelling whatevers, they're almost always blind, and they've got these white eyes. They don't need the same type of eyes that we do. They go off of sound, vibration, things like that. So it does make you wonder then, you know, after they blast this hole open in the wall and they see these things, these bogeymen, maybe they really couldn't, the bogeymen could not see these men standing there. So they just returned to eating this bear carcass, which, by the way, Carrie, it's so funny. I could tell you were probably trying to restrain yourself as far as drawing the actual bear carcass. You know, when you really look, you can see the bones and you're like, okay, she's trying to get after this as a bear carcass, but I think you were just trying not to be too graphic with it, right?
Yes. We're trying to keep our books mostly all ages as much as
yeah,
we can.
So. I could tell. I was like, I know what she's going after here. She's trying to still give us that moment of contact, but without the gore.
Yep, that was 100%. And it was just, and the way they described them, you know, was with tattered clothing and stuff like that. I'm like, why would they have clothing? Mm. You know, so it was very unusual. So we, you know, we kind of just threw a little loincloth on them. And I think that was more for modesty's sake, from Gary's point of view. But it just mentioned that he couldn't tell if they were clothed or not there because they were just so ratty. But it's, I think what it just stood out to me was the big eyes and the clawed hands digging into the bear carcass. So it's like, ooh, yeah, that's just, and again, this family is like, what do we do with this? I said, you know, I'll put it in the book, but you know, you guys should definitely print those pages. You know, they've got them scanned now. So, you know, and they're sharing them with the Historical Society in Kentucky and stuff, but they're hopefully we get them out at Mothman or some of these other events where they can show off these treasures. It would be amazing to see if the family will bring them out. They're still kind of like, they're afraid they're going to get made fun of. They're afraid they're going to get, you know, that's still that stigma.
Right.
But they came to me because they knew I wouldn't do that. And it was a family friend of mine was the one who told them, talk to Mark. He'll make sure it gets to the right people and all that. So I'm just glad we're spreading the story now. So.
You must have just been jumping up and down to come across something like that. I mean, it's never been shared outside of the family. That's incredible.
Yeah. That's the stuff we love. I mean, you know, it was like the gnomes back in Erie, Florida, all the way back then. That's the kind of stuff that's like, yes, I know nobody knows this. I know this has not traveled. And, you know, we have to talk about it. It's yeah, how do you not? These are the stories that are, and again, would be lost. If that one family member hadn't decided to dig through the old chest and the, you know, literally like a Goonies moment, digging mm-hmm. through an old chest in the attic, finding all these old letters and was just transcribing them because it was family letters. And she was afraid they were going to be destroyed over time. And the fact that they haven't been was pretty amazing. Just stored up in a chest up there. And then, oh, here we go. You know, this is exactly what we want. It was great. So,
well, a huge high five to her, and she needs to. And it's tough because of the fact that there is such a stigma still attached to these, especially since this is so far removed from the family ghost story. You know, this isn't the ghost in the attic type of a story. This is very, very unique, which it, why we're so excited about it. But hopefully she realizes that at a place like the Mothman Fest or anything like that, she's amongst her fellow kin that would be into something like this and would welcome her with open arms.
Exactly. Exactly. And that's, I'm hoping as these go out, I'll be sharing this with her. And hopefully she'll realize that, hey, these people, you need to, you know, these things need to be shared, and we love it. And who knows, maybe we'll find some other descendant that had heard this, that, you know, their brother worked yes. in the mine or something. And, or maybe one of those hunters families can talk about it finally, because they've been so afraid. Oh, you know, great grandpa talked about this time he killed monsters in a cave and, you know, he's insane. Well, no, maybe he wasn't. Yeah, you know, that's why we love sharing these stories, because, you know, it could bring some closure to some of these things.
I've said it ad nauseum, but all it takes is just somebody thinking, oh, it's just a little thing. It's just a blip on the radar that can turn into something absolutely massive. And the trickle-down effect is huge because, as you said, somebody else that got this story passed down to them, or heck, maybe there's another letter out there somewhere. Incredible, by the way. I can just see that parchment right now with the writing on it. But where was I going with that? I was going somewhere and I lost my mind somewhere out there. But these cave stories, there's got to be more of those out there. And as much as I'm terrified of, you're not going to catch Shannon going spelunking or anything. I can thank the Descent book for that. But and Seth for dragging me in that damn cave with the spiders and all that. But these types of stories, because it's such a one-off, it really makes you scratch your head and go, well, yeah. It's such a one-off that, I mean, what a fantastical thing to even try to come up with. Why would he do that? Why would he even come up with that? Because look at how the family member all these years later is reacting. She's going, oh, they're going to call me crazy. Well, wouldn't he have thought that writing it? So why write it if he didn't see it? So I don't know. That's my thought on it.
The family just responded matter-of-factly, oh, well, you tell the boss, go in there and kill that thing.
Right.
Yeah, it's like, yeah, that's exactly how it would have been. I mean, there's no shame, there's no concerning and all this. I was surprised there wasn't the usual, you know, oh, you know, make sure the devil is taken care of and all that. You know, it's like, nope, this was literally, oh, this is just some creature, take care of it, you know.
Wow. Cool find, you guys. Huge high five on that. And the biggest high five, of course, to the young lady or the woman that was had mind enough to go, okay, this is really something important that we need to get out there for the data point. So awesome. All right, well, next up, we are going to a place that I have been a lot, West Virginia, and we're going to talk about the Apple Devils.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Oh, yes. No, we do a big section in the book on Bigfoot, Sasquatch, because they're not really holler monsters. They are their own thing, and they are all up and down the Appalachian Trail. And we think they use that as a migration corridor, even. Because they're seen all up and down, all the way up in upstate New York and down to Alabama, and then we get down to Louisiana and our wonderful skunk apes down here in Florida. Of course they could use this. There's so many miles and miles of area that they're, free to travel. But the ones that stood out for us, we talk about the major cases, Minerva Monster and the Ohio Grassman and all that. And again, this one kind of got shadowed because of Mothman. He was in the shadow of Mothman. It was at the same period, the late 60s, and it was in the southeastern part of West Virginia, so right on that Ohio-Kentucky triangle there. And it was this farm was seeing their fruit trees being picked clean, and immediately flashes back to the Gnomes of Bach Tower here. But out there, they see what they said look like monkey men with very long arms just grabbing the fruit from their trees. Now, one of the things that you kind of find from this is these things are shorter than your average Sasquatch. And most of the descriptions said, you know, like they were like 5 feet tall or less, you know, when we're used to Sasquatch stories, you know, 6-8 feet tall, big hairy things. These are like 5 feet tall or less, but with really long arms, like as double the length of the body in some cases, or, you know, just unusually long as like every description. And they get the press, as they start running the articles on it, they call them the great name Apple Devils, right? That's just, the press loves to rename things. And this is the same press that renamed, you know, our flying guy, the Mothman. So they didn't really make noises. No roars or grunts are reported. One of the articles mentions that a creature made sound of kind of a sound, a harumph or something like that. But they were really, there was something that, you know, stuck out to me in the articles was, again, they have the same sour smell. It's our buddy, the skunk ape down here, right? And that's why it sticks back out to me as a Sasquatch encounter, because they, you know, have the smell. They have the same appearances, just a little different, right? So some say they were kind of like a family group and that there were little ones with them. One report even mentioned that they thought they found a nest up in a tree, like that these were arboreal and hung out in trees. So it definitely stood out. And of course, this is one Carrie had to make happen. So Carrie, what was your inspiration for this?
If I had anything in particular, I tried to give each one their own character, so they're distinct, because there's just so many versions of Bigfoot that I like to try to make sure they're each emphasized and different. And when I started drawing him, it somehow fit that he should have a little one with him, and they were enjoying the apples.
Yeah, they're definitely the happiest Bigfoot I think I've ever seen you draw. So I'm right up there with Barton Booger. Yeah, exactly. And again, these were supposedly chased off by hunters. It was interesting because a lot of, you know, most skeptics would say that this is, you know, these are just monkeys or orangutans or something. But I don't know. The farmers in the area were like, no, we've been to the zoo, we've been to the circus, we've seen monkeys and stuff. So, you know, this isn't we ain't stupid, you know. And it's like, yeah, these families know what they're talking about. Again, one of the witnesses we talked to was, well, you know, a grandson of one of the main witnesses, but said he had seen them himself a number of years ago. Probably the way he was describing was late 70s, early 80s. And he saw them and he realized, oh my gosh, this is what granddad talked about, was these long armed creatures that were, now to him, they were a lot bigger. He said they were about 6 or 7 foot tall, but with really long arms. Mm. And they were reaching up into the trees, you know, grabbing some stuff. So are they still in that area? Yeah, could be. Or maybe they migrate through that area, which is why you can't find them very often. Are they arboreal? We've seen stuff like that. Bigfoot hunters have seen stuff up high in the trees now. So maybe that comes from this tribe, you know, or this branch of the Sasquatch family.
Right. And how often really do people look up, and even just separate from Bigfoot researchers? We're normally like nose on the ground looking for prints, something like that. But take out the Bigfoot researchers, how many people stare up into the trees besides maybe bird watchers?
Yeah, exactly. And if you know, we've been out in swamps and woods with teams, and suddenly I'll look up and there'll be something where somebody's carved something at the top of the tree. And, you know, the Bigfoot hunters I've been with like a dozen times, like, you know, I've never seen that because I'm always looking for tracks.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And I'm like, yeah. And somebody's carved initials up there and something. And it was just, oh, it's a marker.
Well, yeah. And then if they do, in fact, live up in trees, it would make sense that their arms would be longer so they can get up in them trees that much easier.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, and it kind of makes sense from a, well, you know, if we go back to monkeys and our great apes, This is how they work. And so, you know, some people say these are more related to apes than man. Well, guess what? This would be more ape than man. And but definitely some rudimentary intelligence, because they knew to hide. They knew to run when people got close, and it would blend in with the trees and disappear. So that would be our cloaking or our natural camouflage and stuff. So
all I know is if I ever get the chance to live somewhere where a Bigfoot encounter would be much more likely than one here in Las Vegas, I would be planting all the apple trees that I could find and that I could have room for.
Yeah. Let's. And that was one of the other things with with the holler stories is when we get these monster stories or these legends, everybody has a way to appease it or to take care of it. They see these things as the wise creatures that guard the farm, that protect the thing. Most of the people who were talking about that, back in the day, it was stealing their fruit, but the family liked it because it protected the farm from the other things. So they started planting special trees just for them. And that would be where we talk holler monsters. You know, the back of the holler was always making the offerings to the people of the mountains, the old man of the mountain, which is their Sasquatch, mm-hmm. stuff like that. So
they have the most incredible names. I mean, I think it's kind of rude to call them apple devils, but, you know, I guess if you really wanted to go out and get some apples for your apple pie and they were gone, you might call you little devil, you know, something like that. So.
Yep. Again, I think that's the press more than the folk in the area.
Yeah. So. Granny can't make her apple pie, though. She doesn't have any apples, so she might call them little devils.
Yeah. I know I would be, I'd be upset. So yeah. Especially if my granny couldn't make her apple pie. I'd have been very upset.
Sorry, my mind is like so loopy today. It's just one of those days. I'm just so random today.
It's been a heck of a month. We're all good.
Right? So. All right. So last but not least, we're heading north a little ways, and we're going to Ohio for the Moonville Tunnel.
Yeah. Now, this is one of those, even if it wasn't haunted, it's just such an amazing place to visit. Right, Carrie?
That's honestly one of my favorite places we went.
Yeah, on this, it was it's a short hop from the ridges, so near Athens. So if you want to go do your spooky tour, you know, you can start over there, go to the ridges, the old asylum, and which is now part of the university there. And then you can also, you know, visit the graves there. And then you take this short drive, and then it turns into a long drive because it is along some crazy roads, right?
Yeah, it's a perilous drive, especially for us used to being on flat land.
Yes, you are literally driving on one lane roads across a ridge where it's a sheer drop on both sides of this little one lane road. It's not quite dirt road. It's just, it's through a state park, and you'll eventually arrive at what was the town of Moonville. And it was basically a stop on the Marietta Cincinnati Railroad was trying to build a line through southeastern Ohio. This guy named Samuel Coe, he owned a lot of land in this area, and he had a couple mines in this area himself. And he said to the railroad company, he's like, build through my land and I will let you build for free. I'll give you the land for free. What railroad company is going to turn down free land, right? But you have to build one stop so that I can load up my mine material onto your railroad tracks. So they start building, and it basically reduced the travel time through the area quite a bit and gets everything over to Cincinnati, where everything can hit the shipping on the Ohio River and head down, you know, down to the Mississippi and, you know, and on all over, you know, that's the artery of America at that time. So one of the towns that springs up along the line is the town of Moonville. There's some questions of why it's called Moonville. Apparently there was a shop there named Mr. Moon, but I couldn't find any records of an actual shop named, you know, with a man named Mr. Moon from that town. But, you know, records, again, not exactly the greatest thing. So that could be, that's just the considered story of why it's got its name. We do know that it had about 100 residents around 1870 for that census. Around 1880, the Baltimore and Ohio Railroad bought the line and it increased the traffic, but it did not increase the stops at the town. And basically, by 1947, Moonville was gone. Now, this was a unique town because it had, the city was basically split by the train tracks. So you had people living on both sides of the train tracks. The shop was on one side of the train tracks. And you'd have to cross the train tracks all the time. Why there aren't a million deaths in this place? Well, the fact there's only 100 people in town, I guess, is, you know why not many died. But, yeah, can you just imagine living, you know, across a railroad track? And it's, so now it's, a wilderness trail goes out there. But the thing is, there was a tunnel just past the town. And this tunnel is still there and is such a place for paranormal activity. It is considered by many one of the most haunted tunnels in the world. So there's for your underground that they blasted through this mountain. It's not very long, maybe a half mile.
It's just long enough to be a good length, very dark tunnel.
Yeah. And one of the most famous ghosts there is there was a brakeman who apparently lived in Moonville, and it was one of his stops. So he would stop there, and he was walking home through the tunnel, and a train was coming. So he lifted his light to stop the train, which of course is, and there's nowhere to go. This is a very narrow tunnel. So he was killed. And so his ghost was seen so much on that tunnel that people would see that light swinging in the tunnel all the time at night. So, you know, that tunnel was run for a long time. And so in 1981, they had so many reports of the trains emergency braking at this tunnel because of seeing strange lights that they put a light on the outside of the tunnel that said, as long as this is green, do ignore all other lights inside the tunnel. That was an instruction for the engineers doing this line in 1981. So, because there were so many ghostly reportings of the brakeman. Now, the other ghost seen there is a young woman, and she apparently had a fiancé in Moonville, and she would walk the tracks to go from her hometown, and she would cross the little Raccoon Creek Trestle Bridge and head up to the tunnel. And somewhere she got hit between the tunnel and the bridge. So her ghost is sometimes seen on the bridge. Her ghost is sometimes seen in the tunnel. And then one of the earliest trains that came through there had an engineer who had apparently been having an affair with one of the conductor's spouses. And so he found out about it and decided, oh, there's an issue with the train, and go check the brake line. We'll stop just outside Moonville and you can get it fixed. And so he had, while the guy was down under the train, he slipped the brake and, you know, cacked the engineer. So it's a crazy story, and they all have check out articles in newspapers. And they all have checked out records of death. So all of these are backed up. And that ghostly light is backed up. Now, in 1986 was the last recorded death. And it was a girl who was on that bridge. And she got hit by one of the last CSX trains that went across that bridge. When you go there, the train tracks have been taken up. The town is gone. There's some telegraph poles, and the cemetery is still there for the town, but that's it. Everything else is gone. It is all just state forest and the tunnel and the bridge. And they had torn up the bridge because they were tired of people walking up to the bridge and ghost hunting in the tunnel. And they were trying to dissuade people from it, but it was finally restored. And now there is a nice bridge across Raccoon Creek. People will cross that bridge. they'll leave locks on the fence on the bridge to appease the girl looking for her lost love, the lost fiance. And then you'll go up to Moonville and walk the tunnel. And it's just beautiful. It's an amazing place to visit. Of course, there's graffiti everywhere because it's a tunnel. It's what people do. We appreciate graffiti done properly. I wish people wouldn't do it so much in places because, hey, you're expressing your art, but there's other places to do it. These are historical sites. Yeah, we don't need to deface them. Go and experience these places. They are amazing. And this is 20 minutes from Athens. If you're there, take the drive. Head out to Moonville. Enjoy a day. You can camp out there in certain areas as long as you let people know you're coming. So it's nice.
I would say bring a light because we tried to leave before sunset because there was no lights out there.
Yeah, it gets dark fast because it's in a valley. Yes. So, like everything out there, you got short days. You don't realize it because the sun goes over those mountains and suddenly it's dark. And you're like, oh, wait, sunset's not for 2 hours. Oh, guess what? It's still pitch black where you're at. And that tunnel is dark. So.
Well, and speaking of lights, are the spook lights still seen to this day?
Yes, very often in that tunnel, people see the brakeman's lights. People see the girl ghost. People see apparitions. Full-bodied apparitions are reported all the time. I got one. The book just went to press. And just came out. The next day, somebody emailed me and said, I was just at Moonville and I saw a strange lady. I had no idea there was a lady ghost because she'd only heard about the brakeman. So she was so happy. She had just read the book 2 days later and she was so excited because Moonville was in it, and then read it and she was like, oh my gosh, that's what I saw. So it's she was seen this year, not even this year, just a month ago. So definitely Moonville should be every paranormalist's top hotspot in that area, I think. And I mean, there's so much right there. So, but what a fun place it is. And beautiful, beautiful. We were there in the fall. So the leaves were all turning and falling. And, we just hit Mammoth Cave, I think the day or two before that. Mm-hmm. And so that was just a beautiful trip. We timed it just right for all that. If you're going to go down in the Underdark, there you go.
Yeah, you just got to watch out for them Hadals, that's all. The bogeymen / Hadals, they're obviously Hadals.
Hadals, yep. We also heard them called the Huntington Hobgoblins.
Mm-hmm.
But they got, that was basically our story of the bogeymen, and it had just been transplanted to Huntington. So, and I was like, wait a minute, that can't be the same story. And then it wasn't. It was different enough, but I couldn't get enough on the Huntington Hobgoblins to really get a story in. But it sounded so close to that. I was like, oh, that might be the same creatures. So I'll dig up more on them as I can. So,
And last question, the cemetery that you mentioned, are any of the people that have died there in these tragic ways buried in that cemetery there?
Yes. Yes, the conductor is there, and the girl is there, and also there's about a dozen graves. So most of them aren't marked; they're just stones, and it's tough to find out who's who, but they're there, and that's where they rest.
Yeah, I'm kind of more than a little bummed that when I came across this that. Because I lived in Ohio for a couple of years, that I didn't take the drive down there. That's unfortunate. And then there's Wayne County, Wayne National Forest has a ton of Bigfoot sightings. So
yes, yeah, that is very popular Squatch area too. So Squatch hunters frequent that forest quite a bit. And like I said, as you're driving those ridges, yes, I would. There could have been 100 of them right next to us. We would never have seen them. And this is fall when all the leaves are coming down.
Yeah.
But it was still so dense. You're not seeing 10 feet. Yeah. I can't imagine that place in the winter. Oh my goodness. That would be a little scary with some ice and some snow, or even in the springs with all the water. But now remember this place, when they tore up the bridge, they didn't want people going to Moonville for a while. So maybe when you were there, it might not have been accessible because this is, late 80s, they tore it apart so nobody could go to it. And it wasn't until recently, we're talking, early 2000s, that they finally was restored. And 2010 was when they finally rebuilt the bridge 100% and opened it. So,
Well, yeah, it certainly is a beautiful place. I mean, you Google it and it's just dense forest right around there, which is expected of Ohio, and it fulfills that. But yeah, really pretty place. What a lot of sad stories, though, my goodness, including murder.
Yes, yes, murder, tragedy. I mean, this is a town of 100 people, and it had all this happen.
Which makes you wonder then, why. Like, what, you know, what is the, do they have something, some rocks or something in the earth there, water mixed in, you know, that makes this place have so much dark energy?
There was a mine there. So these are all mining tragedies. Mm-hmm. So, you know, you go back to the Lord of the Rings, they dug too deep. You know, what have they brought? So, I don't know. Are the stones affecting things? Are the, you know, are the mountains themselves calling forth? It's a weird feeling when you get out there, but we love it. It calls to us. It soothes us, but it definitely has that chill edge that you feel when you go to these places. We were in the tunnel and we tried to, it was pitch black. So we're trying to selfie right in the middle of the tunnel and it flashed. And we got the best looks on our faces because we're both looking completely wrong directions. And it's like, and that's how dark it is in there. Come out the other side and it was all light. I was like, wow, I can see why there would be spooky lights in here and all that. So,
yeah. What a dark place. I mean, see what happens when the One Ring is still in existence, not melted in the fires of Mount Doom. Things go down. Yeah. It's not always good.
Just bring it down here to Florida. It'll melt in my yard at this point.
No kidding. Yes, it will. I've been to Florida in August, and that is a very true statement.
Yep. We are in our sixth month of our 9 months of August. So
that's right.
We'll cool off right around Thanksgiving. We'll have our three random days of winter sometime between Thanksgiving and January.
Yeah.
So
it'll cool down to like 65 and be freezing.
We'll get some weird ones. It'll be like 17 or 20. We've had snow, but it's been years.
That's been so rare.
It's been decades, but they had flurries just north of us.
Yeah, it can last happen. Year, so. They say that about Vegas too. Don't worry. They're like, oh, you don't know what it's like to be cold there. We're like, well, we get cold here. We've had snow, and we get cold in the winter. We have hoodies and everything. It's weird. Crazy.
Florida, we don't, but it's so good. But it rains every day, and we don't own umbrellas. So, you know, because it's going to stop raining in like 20 minutes.
Exactly.
So why bother?
Blows in, blows out. You're all done. It's all good. But if you get caught in it, you're definitely soaked and you're not going to dry off because it's humid. But at least it's not around all day.
Yep. And so I can't wait to tell some of these holler monster stories up at Mothman Festival, because I'm speaking at the Mothman Festival. So I know the Mothman experts are there. The Bigfoot experts are there. The UFO experts are there. What am I going to talk about that they're not going to, you know, run circles around me with? So I'm bringing the holler monsters, and I'm going to be talking some of these that are in the book and some that, you know, didn't quite make the cut, but might make future editions and stuff like that. Mm-hmm. And, Carrie will be there signing, and drawing things in the books. We'll have special prints available. We want to thank Jeff Wamsley from the Mothman Museum for inviting us. We'll hang out with Seth and crew up there. So we're all excited. Hopefully we'll see you at Small Town Monsters Festival next year.
Oh, yes. Heck yeah. You guys are coming.
Yeah.
Right?
Oh yes. Yes. Okay, we have secured our booth for that. So we will be, we'll be vendors. That's up in Ohio.
Oh, well, I want to go more Ohio stuff.
Yeah, exactly. Mm. We got more coming. So, and we've got another research trip coming up right after Halloween to do more spooky things, because we've got another Florida book on the way, and then we got probably another Appalachia book, because so many stories are falling into place. So that means for Carrie and me, it's hopping in the Erie Mobile and seeing what else we can find. So it's going to be a busy time coming up.
Well, and honestly, Mark, even if you didn't go with the holler monsters theme, which I think is wonderful, of course, but... And this might already be included in, but all of the fact that you guys get the most incredible one-off stories that I've never seen anywhere else, and it's because it's not anywhere else except for the hands of the families and the minds of the families, things like the Kudzu Kelpie, the bogeyman. These are things that are incredible one-offs that you guys have found and cultivated and put out in the ether. So I'm just going to say, I got to say that. You got to give yourself a lot more credit than you just did.
Well, we appreciate that. And it's always fun when we have our good friend Al Goingback, who's a seminal medicine man and probably one of the best authors I've ever read. He still is like, I am writing something about those gnomes from Bock Tower, because he just thinks that was, he is a master of all things Florida folklore, and he had never heard that. And then when I showed him the emails and we read him the stories and all that, he's like, it's like, we got to do something with this. We have to. And I'm like, well, you've won awards. You can do this.
Yeah, you have a ton of stuff to talk about, so nobody's going to run circles around you. But let everybody know where to find you guys on the socials and, of course, where to get all the books. And we've got edition 3 coming up, so everybody can look forward to that. Give everybody the scoop.
Well, you can find us at Erie Florida for most of our stuff. ErieFlorida.com or at Erie Florida on the socials. We've also expanded to at Erie Travels, where you can find our show that we do for a local station down here in Florida. It's on YouTube, Erie Travels TV. You can find some of the first few episodes are posted. Season 2 starts filming very soon. We had to close down for a month when we got hit by the dread virus. But we're back on the road. Things are going great. You can get our books direct from us, where Carrie will do some magic in them for you, some illustrations, and I'll write some words of wisdom. You can get that from our websites, ErieFlorida.com or ErieTravels.com. But of course, you can find our books any fine bookstore. And then you can also find us at all the events. We'll be like the Mothman Festival. We'll be at Dragon Con. Dragon Con, I'll be with the Bard's Tower booth, which will be a lot of fun. There's a lot of authors there for that. So if you're looking for Jim Butcher, he'll be there. And I'll be just a little ways away from him, which is crazy. If you haven't read Jim Butcher's books, those are amazing. He writes the Dresden Files, which is basically what if Harry Potter grew up and became a badass detective and had to deal with fairies and Bigfoot and monsters. So a lot of fun.
Well, I always love talking to you guys, and thank you for taking time out of your busy Sunday to chat with me. And yeah, like I said, Erie Appalachia Edition 3 coming up very shortly.
Happy to do it, and we will talk to you soon. Love you, Shannon.
Love you guys.
Love you.
Well, I'm so-and-so. I was given this name by my parents. I've been to such and such a college. I've done these things in my profession. I produce a little bark. The Buddha says, forget it. That's not true. That's some story. That's all gone. That's all past. I want to see the real you are now. Well, nobody knows who that is. Because we don't know ourselves except through listening to our echoes and consulting our memories. But then there's a real you, and that again leads us back to this question. Who are you? That is the real you. We shall see how they play with this exam. By the koans, to get you to come out of your shell and find out who you really are. No, we don't believe literally in reincarnation. That after your funeral, you know, you will suddenly become somebody different, living somewhere else. They will say reincarnation means this, that if you sitting here now are really convinced that you're the same person who walked in at the door half an hour ago, you're being reincarnated. If you are liberated, you understand that you're not. The past doesn't exist. The future doesn't exist. There is only the present. That's the only real you that there is. The Zen master Dogen put it this way. He said, spring does not become the summer. First there is summer, and then there is spring.
Hey there! Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.